Welcome to the Thanksgiving edition of Real Simple, brought to you by OWL Radio, a community service of the Low Vision Resource Center. I'm Shirley Crandall, and for the next half hour, I'll be reading articles from the November edition of Real Simple. The picture is of a large slice of pumpkin pie with whipped cream on top. Things cooks know. Experts share their tried and true tips for a foolproof Thanksgiving that's easy as pumpkin pie to pull together, by Jenna Helwig. The issue: cooking this massive meal in one day requires superhuman endurance and an advanced degree in logistics. The fix: make ahead. On Thanksgiving Day, I'm really only concerned with the turkey. Everything else is already fully or partially prepared, says John Cannell, author of Preppy Kitchen: Recipes for Seasonal Dishes and Simple Pleasures. A few days in advance, cook the sides, chop vegetables for stuffing, make cranberry sauce, and get your rolls ready to bake. If you do as much as you can before Thursday, Thanksgiving might almost feel leisurely, Cannell says. Almost. Pies can also be made early. I refrigerate the pumpkin pie custard and crust separately, then fill the pie and bake it first thing Thanksgiving morning, says Amy Thielen, author of the upcoming book, Company: The Radically Casual Art of Cooking for Others. The spices in the custard need time to bloom, so it tastes better after a day or two in the fridge, and baking the pie fills the house with wonderful Thanksgiving smells. The issue: you're working with just one oven, you know, like most people. The fix: cooking in a standard kitchen on Thanksgiving Day can be a bit of a brain teaser. If two dishes go into the oven at the same time, how long will it take the train to get to the station? Skip the mental gymnastics and call on your small appliances. Cannell suggests heating up a dish or two in the microwave. An Instant Pot set on the sauté setting becomes an extra burner for warming up gravy or vegetables. An air fryer can warm up or even bake rolls. And Thielen swears by those bonus countertop burners for big meals. They're much better than they used to be and get quite hot. We like the Duck's Top 1800-watt portable induction cooktop countertop burner, $57, at Amazon.com. And remember that your turkey will stay warm for up to an hour on the counter after roasting. Use that hour to reheat sides in the already hot oven. The issue: yikes, the turkey is still frozen. The fix: for thawing, budget a day in the fridge for each 4 to 5 pounds. Already behind? Thielen suggests putting the packaged turkey in a sink full of cold water for a day. I weigh the bird down with heavy pans, adding ice throughout the day to keep it cold. By evening, it's mostly thawed, and I refrigerate it so it keeps thawing overnight. If you find ice in the cavity when you season the bird, rinse the cavity with cold water until the ice is loose enough to pull out. The issue: your gravy tastes meh. The fix: dear old gravy can often be a problem, says Nicole A. Taylor, author of Watermelon and Redbirds, a cookbook for Juneteenth and Black celebrations. To rescue it, try adding finely chopped herbs and a splash of balsamic vinegar. Another easy way to deepen the flavor: stir in a bit of soy sauce or fish sauce for an undertone of umami. The issue: getting everything to the table at the same time while it's still hot feels like an impossible feat. The fix: when menu planning, choose a few cold dishes, like a colorful salad, or at least some that taste good closer to room temperature. Roasted Brussels sprouts and squash are delicious with only a little lingering heat. In general, veggies cooked with olive oil fare better at room temperature because butter congeals at a lower temperature. Vegetables cooked with butter need to be served hot to stay slick, Thielen points out. The issue: vegan guests, gluten-free guests, keto guests. The fix: make sure you know about your crowd's dietary restrictions. If you don't know, ask in advance, like now. For most groups, serving two hearty vegetarian dishes will cover you. But if there's more than one vegan in the bunch, make those delicious dishes totally plant-based instead. This will also accommodate your dairy-free folks. That's often as simple as swapping out butter for olive oil or plant-based butter. Also totally fine? Ask friends with dietary restrictions if they'd like to bring a dish to share. The issue: your carefully constructed pie crust always slump in the oven. The fix: many recipes call for lining an unbaked pie shell with parchment paper, filling it with pie weights or dried beans, and then fully or partially baking it without the filling. This is known as blind baking or par baking, but that often isn't enough to stop the sag. There are a few keys to preventing crusts from slumping. Canal says, first, choose a ceramic or metal pie plate. Glass tends to be more slippery. After you place the crust in the pie plate, freeze it for an hour, then line it with parchment paper as usual. But instead of adding the pie weights on top of the parchment, take a long sheet of heavy-duty aluminum foil, double or triple it, and mold it into a pie shell shape. Place the foil shell on top of the parchment and then add the weights. The aluminum foil is like a magical wall that keeps your pie crust supported, and it's reusable. The issue: there are pounds and pounds of leftovers. The fix: be prepared. Stock up on to-go containers in all sizes, aluminum foil, and wax or parchment paper, Taylor instructs. Mac and cheese fits well in a neatly folded foil packet. Cake and pies need a roomy box and wax paper. You can also ask guests to bring their own containers. The issue: after dinner, the kitchen looks like it was hit by a gravy tornado. The fix: do whatever it takes to have an empty dishwasher, sink, and dish rack when guests arrive. This is an excellent job for children, teenagers, or anyone who doesn't cook. With a blank slate, you can get the plates in the dishwasher and crusty pans soaking in the sink right away. Once everyone is stuffed, do like Thielen and divide the mess into bite-sized chunks. Prolonged, never-ending cleaning and pan scrubbing kills the mood in the room. So after the meal, I let my family and friends clear the table and load the dishwasher. Then we sit back down again to talk and gather our strength for dessert. Major pot and pan scrubbing can come later, after you're fortified by pie. The 20-minute reorg. Fridge and freezer refresh. Managing your food storage can be like playing a game of Tetris, especially when you're hosting a holiday feast. Allie Rosen, author of Modern Freezer Meals, shares how to keep it all in there while keeping your cool, by Teddy Wilson. The picture is of a well-organized refrigerator with containers that are see-through of varying sizes, all neatly stacked. Take out the trash. Now is the time to toss your collection of stale, moldering, and languishing food. It's eating up valuable real estate. Go through the fridge and freezer and toss anything that looks or smells funky. Don't forget the stuff on the doors. Label like a pro. Fact: future you is not going to remember what today you wraps in foil, no matter how many times you promise yourself you will. Take a minute to label food in the freezer and leftovers in the fridge. Just use a piece of masking tape and a permanent marker to note what is inside today's date. Leave room for new stuff. What if a guest brings an ambrosia for later? Ooh, thanks. What if you need a spot for leftovers before the big meal? Make sure there's room for new additions as they come, and go with square or rectangular containers because round ones often waste space. Add to cart. Air is the enemy of all things frozen. These easy-to-stack glass containers and reusable plastic bags come with a handheld vacuum pump that sucks out air before storage. Fresh and Save Starter Set, $125, zwilling.com. Prevent freezer bags from sliding out of control with this bin. Adjustable dividers keep sealed packages upright and make it easier to find what you're after. Ucopia, Freeze Up Freezer Bin, $30, thecontainerstore.com. You can't eat what you can't see. This 9-inch turntable puts ingredients front and center with a flick of the wrist. Bonus, it's super fun to watch things spin round and round. iDesign Linus Deep Turntable, $21, thecontainerstore.com. How we live: advice, inspiration, and a little peace of mind. The picture is of a gray and white table runner with a vase of red roses and purple and pink flowers and dishes of the Thanksgiving variety. A quick chat. The dish on awkward dinner convos. We spoke with a neuroscientist researcher about the art of table talk, and there was only one uncomfortable pause. Even better, we learned how to calm our brain and enjoy Thanksgiving chatter by Allie McLinn. Whether you like it or not, it's time to gather with your nearest and dearest to share food, fellowship, and conversation. You'll likely talk about all sorts of things: current events, parenting styles, Harry styles, how much garlic is too much, and why your niece felt compelled to get those new violet hair streaks, for example. To save your table from stilted chit-chat, painful silences, and debates that get a little too spirited, especially when the wine is flowing, we talked to Mark Robert Waldman, a neuroscience researcher and co-author of Words Can Change Your Brain, 12 Conversation Strategies to Build Trust, Resolve Conflict, and Increase Intimacy. He's full of actionable advice. The picture is of many hands toasting festive drinks. Real simple. When readers of your book see conversation strategies in the subtitle, they might expect advice about what to say and what not to say, but many of the principles aren't about words. They're about slowing down, refraining from saying too much. Simple strategies. Mark Robert Waldman. That's because human beings are the worst communicators on the planet. We talk more than we need to. We listen poorly without realizing it. We don't pay attention to the nonverbal messages our conversation partners convey with facial expressions, gestures, and tone of voice, which make up the bulk of our communication. Real simple. Why are we so bad at this? MRW. Most of the time, we try to put into words feelings that are impossible to describe. We get lost in the big, busy imagination network in our brain that is generating all kinds of fantasies and worries about the future. So instead of listening to what the other person has to say, we're coming up with what we want to say next. But when we use principles of compassionate communication, deeply relaxing in order to stay present, paying close attention to the other person's expressions and tone, responding slowly and warmly, we neurologically resonate with our partner's emotional state. We become attuned to each other. The brain can't keep more than a few chunks of information in working memory. Someone can speak 400 words, but the other person will remember 10 to 20. They'll focus on the words that seem important to them, which is often different from what you wanted to convey. Speak briefly, no more than 20 words, and you'll choose the best ones to express what you mean. From everything I've said so far, what stands out to you? Real simple. Oh, many interesting things. Several things? MRW. Notice how difficult it is for you to answer clearly, because you're in your imagination, thinking of the 1,000 different things you might say. What if I told you you had to answer in 10 words or less? Real simple. Non-verbal communication is more important than words. MRW. Can you feel the shift in your awareness trying to speak this way? Real simple. Absolutely, I feel less panicky. MRW. Yes, the anxiety comes from getting lost in your imagination. Sometimes I ask couples to do this as a game, to have a conversation in which everything each one says is 10 to 20 words. They have to pay close attention to their expression, tones, and body language. It interrupts their ability to get angry or defensive, which can generate hundreds of emotional words. In about 4 to 7 minutes, most people will feel a surprising sense of intimacy. Real simple. How can we consciously remind ourselves to slow down? MRW. I recommend that you begin with mindful yawning. Yawning increases cerebral blood flow and switches us from the brain's default mode network, which is activated when we're stuck in our heads, to the central executive network, which helps us focus on the present and our desired goal. Close your eyes and yawn slowly, noticing where the yawn starts, what it feels like as you yawn. You should notice that you feel calmer, Or, if you're not in a place where you feel comfortable yawning, at the dinner table, for instance, another method is nurturing touch. Just slightly stroke your palm and arm. Go really, really slowly for about 4 seconds for each inch. Try it now. Real simple. It is calming. I feel like a cat being petted. But will it help when someone's pushing your buttons? Say your mom wants to know when you're going to give her another grandchild. MRW. In this state of relaxed awareness, you may be surprised to find that you're less likely to have your buttons pushed. We tend to mirror other people's emotional states, but sometimes it's wiser to stay deeply relaxed and focused on a pleasurable feeling or thought. I'm not saying you have to force yourself to be positive all the time, but the moment a person displays even the slightest bit of negativity, it increases negativity in both the speaker's and listener's brains. Mindfully relaxing helps you avoid defensiveness and leaves you more curious, even playful. You might be able to respond very differently. To just say, Mom, I wish I knew. You're not committing to anything. Keep a small half smile on your face and she'll feel listened to, which is what we all desire, right? Real simple. But what if Mom doesn't let it go? Or what if Uncle Harold wants to get into another political debate? MRW. I would stay anchored to a deep inner value. Before you go into the room, put yourself in that state of relaxed awareness and ask your intuition, what is one of my innermost values? Listen for that small whisper and find a single word that captures something meaningful and essential. Peace, for instance. Any word that gives you a sense of serenity. Stay focused on that word when you are in an uncomfortable situation. It can be different every time you do this. If you close your eyes and get still right now, what comes to you? Real simple. Love? MRW. That's one of the most common. By the way, if you ask 100 people what their definition of love is, you may get 100 different answers. We assume words mean the same thing to others as they do to us, but that isn't the case, which is another reason we're such poor communicators. But imagine yourself filled with your deepest inner value, whether it's love or integrity or compassion, and hanging on to that state as you sit across from your mom or Uncle Harold. Let that love radiate through you. How does that feel? Real simple. Certainly better than walking in prepared for battle. MRW, which is what we often do. We all have these ideas about what may or may not happen. We're not even present with ourselves. But these techniques work. I teach doctors to use them before they go in to tell a patient bad news. They sit outside, do a mindful yawn, focus on the deep inner value, walk in, and speak slowly and with warmth. Doctors who do that find that their patients are more likely to follow their advice. Real simple. This all sounds simple, but not necessarily easy, especially when relatives are concerned. MRW. One of my favorite sayings is from the spiritual teacher Dam Ras. If you think you are enlightened, go spend a week with your family. I'll guarantee you that every old defensive behavior will come bubbling up to the surface. But if you become irritable, see if you can just think, okay, I'm irritable. I'm going to observe that irritability, and maybe it'll fade away. If you can relax enough to suspend those old habits and step into the present instead of pulling bad memories from the past or getting lost in fantasies about the future, you find yourself in this place of exploration, meeting people you've known all your life for the very first time. Modern Manners, Advice for Your Social Quandaries, by Michelle Buteau. The picture is of the author standing with her hands on her hips, smiling at the camera. She's wearing a pink and navy plaid blazer, a white top, and dark navy pants. Carol asks, a friend told me she had no plans for her birthday, so I invited her over. The next day, she said her son and other friends would be joining her. She added more people the next day. The day of our get-together, she texted that she was adding 4 more. I told her I'd had a busy week and I wasn't up for that many people. We had a nice time with 6 guests, some of whom I didn't know. A few days later, she told me I'd put her in a terrible position by having her disinvite her friends. I was taught never to invite people to someone else's house. What do the rules of etiquette say? Oh my goodness, Carol. You are such a good friend for even wanting to make sure your friend would have a birthday. And that's where it stops, you know? It's really unrealistic of her to expect you'd be okay with her adding to the guest list. She should have rented the back room of a restaurant or hosted a party at her own home. I'm glad you put your foot down and said no to more people. Your time is precious, especially when you've had a busy week. You want to be able to rest and heal. The fact that you offered to have a birthday celebration says what kind of person you are. And the fact that she wanted to bring more people and got salty about it says what kind of person she is. Listen, you should only be friends with people who show up for you the way you show up for them. Period. Wendy asks, a good friend of my mom's constantly shoves her cell phone in our faces to show us her pictures. She will interrupt conversations to do so. Her behavior feels one-sided because she never asks about our lives or requests to see our pictures. I'm happy she takes such pleasure in her family photos. It just never ends. Is there a nice way to say, enough with your phone in my face? Wendy, I am so sorry your mom's friend is annoying. Shoving your cell phone in someone's face to show pictures when nobody asked? That's a big bucket of no thank you. No one ever wants anything shoved in their face they didn't ask for, okay? Hashtag life rule. Because it seems like she's one of your mother's good friends, like perhaps they've known each other for a while and there's history, I would definitely tell her what's up. If she serves sassy auntie vibes, then throw some tell-it-like-it-is niece energy. Some things you can say. I've had a long work week. I'm very tired. I look at a computer all day. I can't look at any more screens. If she doesn't take the hint, then you'll just have to tell her. I came here to see my mom. I can't look at any more pictures unless they're of my mom. Or, okay, lady, if you're going to show me pictures, I'm going to show you some pictures too. Then give it right back. You could have a picture off. Doesn't that sound exciting? It honestly scares me a little bit. Good luck. Aiko asks, my husband and I own a small cottage across the street from our home. We've designed it to be a lakefront playhouse, where we host campfires, sports viewing parties, and outdoor gatherings. There's also a small bedroom for overnight guests. My brother and his wife assume they have an open invitation. Sadly, my husband and I find my sister-in-law very difficult. She's loud, opinionated, and pushy. But we love my brother, but absolutely dread and usually regret our encounters with his wife. We feel like we must say yes to the request to stay over. How can we manage this situation? Aiko, congratulations on winning at life. A small lakefront cottage that's a playhouse? Not to be the annoying sister-in-law, but can I come over? You've set up your house to be the fun house, where everybody wants to come over. And honestly, you guys sound like a really good time. There are a few ways you can go with this. Option one, invite somebody else to stay there when you're having a party your brother and sister-in-law are invited to, and say, hey, this room is occupied already, so sorry you can't stay here. Option two, they're family, so you still have to see them, but invite them way less. You have to protect your own energy and your heart. Life is too short, and stress will age you, honey. Option three, just tell them they can't stay. You don't have to give a reason. This is your lakefront playhouse. Want to be sister of the year? Suggest a great inn or rental, above and beyond. Polly asks, how can I engage my 18 and 20-year-old granddaughters in give-and-take conversations? We don't get to see one another often as we live on opposite sides of the country. I would love to hear their thoughts on any number of subjects rather than the one- or two-word answers that usually come forth. How do I make it clear I'm truly interested in them? Polly, I love this for you. I love that you want to engage with your granddaughters. I say meet them where they're at. Find out what they're into and see if you can speak their language. It feels like you can't go wrong with social media. Do you have social media? If not, maybe your granddaughters can help you set up an account and you can keep in touch that way. Is it TikTok? Is it Instagram? I don't know. Also, are your granddaughters into fashion? Were you into fashion? Do you have any hand-me-downs you'd like to give them? Something vintage? A purse? Is there a television series you all can watch and talk about? Maybe something you wouldn't usually watch, but they would. Much like any great friendship or relationship, you get what you give. So find things that they like to talk about, speak in their own language, and on their planet, and then maybe they'll realize what you're into is super cool. Rebecca asks, I have a very generous friend, but every time we go out to eat as a group, she orders a bunch of appetizers before everyone arrives without consulting anyone about what they want or what dietary needs they have. She'll also order more food without asking. Then we're all left to split the bill for food we didn't want or eat. How can I address this? Is this question about me? This feels like it's about me. I'm the generous friend who shows up early and orders half the menu, but then I pay for it. I have a little bit of anxiety when people are at a restaurant. Nobody knows what to get. It becomes a weird debate. And meanwhile, I'm just getting more hungry. This person is probably coming from a good place. And also, they're type A. It's got alpha written all over it. I love alpha friends. When someone wants to be in charge this much, just give them another thing to do. They're really on their own planet, so just try to speak their language. Next time, if you know what restaurant you're going to, check out the menu beforehand and say, I love these two dishes. Please get them for me if you're there before me. Or, hey, could you just wait for me? I like the process of going through the menu with you guys first. I guarantee your friend will want to support your dinner experience. If the next dinner doesn't go the way you're hoping, I'll take you out and pay. About Michelle. Michelle Buteau is a mother, wife, dog mama, actor, writer, comedian, and TV host. Her book of autobiographical essays, Survival of the Thickest, will soon be a Netflix series. She also co-hosts the popular podcast Adulting on the Exactly Right Network. Pick Your Pour. The picture is of a dark green wall in the background with a marble countertop in the foreground and three glasses of bubbling beverages. Wine has to work hard on Thanksgiving, complementing widely varying flavors and softening the sharp edges of family interactions. Your best bet? Keep it simple. Choose one red and one white to take you from appetizers to dessert. Sommelier Lydia Richards, founder of Vino Concierge, suggests a light or medium-bodied red like Pinot Noir or Gamay. For white, something more acidic, such as a dry Riesling. Chenin Blanc or Albarino will help balance the meal's richness. Or lean into bubbles. Food-friendly sparkling wine tends to have higher acidity, which helps cleanse the palate, Richards says. So every sip leaves you ready for the next buttery bite. How much to buy? Richards ballparks 1 to 2 glasses per guest per hour. So do the math. Multiply the duration of your gathering by the size of your crowd, then multiply that number by 2, to be safe, for the total number of glasses you might need. Each bottle contains about 5 glasses, depending on how generous your pour is. Get a few more bottles in case and make sure everyone toasts the cook. The picture is of a drawing of a pile of a variety of multicolored shoes piled on top of a welcome mat. Real simple settles it. Should you ask guests to take off their shoes? Everyone's got an opinion, so we collected yours, then asked experts to settle the debate once and for all, by Leslie Corona. Absolutely. I don't have to ask. They know better than to leave them on. I have a basket by the door with disposable blue covers for shoes. Some people never come back, and that's okay. Yes, yes, yes. And if they don't comply, I let my little kids ask them incessantly why they have left their shoes on. Cringe. No. I find it rude to ask people to remove their shoes. We have dogs, so we're obviously cleaning our floors a lot. And what's a little more cleaning? People usually wipe their shoes, though. No, I think it's weird. I've been to parties where they make you do so, and it's strange seeing bare feet and socks. Shoes are part of my look. Some people's feet are dirtier than their shoes. The verdict. You should institute a no-shoes policy. Plenty of cultures around the world have been doing it forever, and they're on to something. Keeping your kicks on is a good way to spread germs around the house, says Charles Gerba, PhD, professor of virology at the University of Arizona. He conducted a small study that found fecal bacteria on about 90% of people's shoes. Oh, and don't get us started on pesticides and other chemicals. After the first 5 steps, the contamination lessens, Gerba says, but still, blech. For concerned pup owners, a 2021 Utrecht University study showed that the paws of assistance dogs were cleaner than the shoes of their people. Going unshod is better for floors, too. Carpets get grody fast, and although hardwood is durable, particles can still scratch it and high heels can leave marks, says Brett Miller, a vice president at the National Wood Flooring Association. Which brings us to party time. Visitors may want to keep footwear on because it's part of their ensemble, or they may struggle with walking in bare feet. As a host, you should put others at ease, says Elaine Swan, etiquette expert and founder of the Swan School of Protocol. If guests aren't prepared to take off their shoes, it might make them uncomfortable, and we don't want that. Have a bench near the door and a place to store footwear. Since guests' biggest concerns about taking off shoes are likely comfort and self-consciousness, maybe they haven't had a pedicure in a while, load up on slippers or socks from the dollar store and let guests keep them. Or relax your rules only when hosting and give the floors a very good scrub when the party's over. Thank you for listening to the Thanksgiving edition of Real Simple. This program will be replayed this evening starting at 9 p.m. If you have questions or comments, please call us at 210-829-4223. This is Shirley Crandall saying goodbye from Owl Radio.